This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
NFL's king. I don't think I'm breaking any news there, but is college football closing the gap? Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban got the internet going nuts. And I want to discuss the difference between the college game and the pro game, and if college could be closing that gap. The one thing that college football has not had until recently, they didn't really have free agency. Transfer portal has created free agency, maybe the wackiest form of free agency ever.
Didn't
have a playoff. Now they have a playoff. That could actually be expanding. Is college football closing the gap on the NFL? Are we going to get to a point where it's 1A and 1B instead of the NFL above everyone else looking down?
No, I mean, I think it's always going to be the NFL above everyone else looking down, but I think college football is already 1B. Like, what is bigger? I don't know if there's anything bigger than a college football Saturday in sports other than maybe, like, if you want to include the postseason of respective sports. Like, right now, what are you more likely to do? Are you more likely to go watch tonight Luka, you know, Mavs and Warriors than you are, say, you name it, your favorite pick'em college football Saturday game? Like, I think it's already 1B or maybe a clear 2, but closer to being a 1B than anywhere else. So, I mean, are they closing the gap? I mean, I think they're probably furthering the gap from everybody else, but the NFL's still going to be king.
What advantages does college have? I would say magnitude of games, from start to finish. No other sport has that level of magnitude. Like, it's one of 17 in the NFL now. Yeah. College, there are games, like, every week you're going to have a game with national title implications, especially with how small the playoff is right now. That could be eliminated if the playoff expands, which is something that I'm concerned about because I actually like this type of thing. I like the start to finish. I know that they don't have the title of playoff game, but when Ohio State's playing Michigan at the end of the year, and the winner's going to get in the college football playoff. Spoiler alert, that's just like a playoff, even though on the bottom left of your screen it doesn't say playoffs here on ABC or Fox or whatever it is. So that's the one advantage college has. Intensity in the stadium.
Yep.
I think college football has over everyone else.
Yep.
The emotions, I would say, of the fans and the coaches, although NFL fans are emotional, but that college football fans are like European soccer fans, their next level. Those are the advantages that college has over pro right now.
Yeah, it's that every game matters. And I don't think it's just because of the postseason implications. Like, I think that's just part of it, but only even for a select few of teams. Like, how many teams or how many colleges, fans of a different college, even go into the college football season thinking that they have a chance to make the college football playoff? Like, I got a good buddy that's a South Carolina fan. South Carolina, wow. Like, he went there. He went to South Carolina. They're not never winning nothing, but he's there every week, every game, like it actually matters. I think the big word is just that it's more personal. Like, college football is just more personal. It's more regional. You grow up, I feel like you, in some cases, if you're a big college football fan, sometimes you establish that even before you make your NFL team. I think the allegiances are stronger. Like, every game matters, not just because of the playoff implications, but because of what it means to, like, that specific region. I feel like those areas ride for those teams even more so than an area might even necessarily ride for his pro team.
The other thing that I think is actually going to add to the popularity of college football, and when you hear about college basketball and you talk about the problems with college basketball, talking about the difference between college football and pro football with Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban dominating the headlines with Brandon Scott in for John Lopez, is some people, when they talk about college basketball, they say, well, it's not as popular now as it was back then because players don't stay there for 3 years, and you don't 3 or 4 years, and the guys are gone, they're one and done, and the one and done has made it worse. The transfer portal in college football, I think, actually adds to the popularity. I don't think it takes away, because you now have a situation where if you're an Oklahoma fan and you see your quarterback from last year, Caleb Williams, playing for USC, you automatically have interest in the USC game. It's not like Caleb Williams leaves college football and he goes to the pros immediately after 1 year. It's not the one and done. You now have like a rooting interest. Someone transferred here and he ends up here. So you naturally have, you have Oklahoma fans who now have like two favorite teams, Oklahoma and anyone who USC is playing. So I actually think the transfer portal, while it can be frustrating for a lot of fans for a lot of reasons, I think it's good for the players, and I think it's good for the sport because it spreads out the interest to where you have a rooting interest in games that you normally wouldn't have an interest in. And let's be honest, a lot of the teams, like the South Carolina that you mentioned, they added Spencer Rattler because of that. They wouldn't have been able to do that had the transfer portal been out. So they add that. So you have guys coming in that give you hope, and you have guys leaving that add to the emotion of college football. I think the overall emotions, it was already the highest. They're getting even higher because of these things.
Yeah, and I'm just pro transfer portal because I think it matters more that the players have that sort of freedom, especially given that the coaches do. So, like, even if it, and I agree with your point, like, it does benefit the game. I feel like even if it hurt it, I would be for it. But more than anything, man, I feel like the difference, like, you brought college basketball as an example, kind of juxtaposing the two. I think the difference, man, is that the quality of college football is just better than the quality of college basketball. And the fact that, like, football is just over basketball. Like, we'll watch bad football over bad basketball. Like, even if the football is bad, I feel like you can get us into the narratives and into the storylines, which you can't really do as easily with basketball if the actual product itself is bad. So in that regard, like, I just think the quality of the sport kind of speaks for itself more so than college basketball does. And then the transfer portal, the flexibility, the ability to just make your team that much better without having the player himself having to wait a year, kind of adds to the talent level that you're able to put out there.
713-572-4610 if you want to get in. 832 on the text line. NFL appeals to everyone, not just college grads. I know a lot of non-college grads that like college football.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, no, this is the biggest misnomer, because the thing with college football is that you, if you're a college football fan, often you establish your college football fandom even before you even know you're going to college.
Well, that was
like I was a Texas fan before I even knew that I was going to be like qualified to go to college, before I even knew I was smart enough to go. And I damn sure didn't have the money or the grades to get into Texas. So it was like I was never going to be able to go there. But I established that fandom as a kid, you know, watching Ricky Williams. I'm from the same neighborhood as Vince Young. Like, I didn't need to go to college to rock with college.
I'm
football.
An Ohio State fan, and I didn't go to college.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be, you know, a college grad for college football to appeal to you. From the 281, until college football has more than one or two marquee games a week, they'll never be close to the NFL. How many marquee games does the NFL really have compared to college football?
Sometimes, well, not even that many.
I mean, a lot of times they can hype it up, but in the big scheme of things, like Patrick Mahomes versus Justin Herbert week three, that doesn't have an ounce of the magnitude of, say, I don't know, a non-conference game between Clemson and Alabama or something week two. We look back on that game. That game, you carry that game with you for 13 weeks. In the NFL, it's on to the next one,
yeah,
which can be good. But as far as magnitude, like marquee games, no league has more marquee games than college football with the amount of implications. Now, it might stink that you lose one and you feel out, but even then, it becomes more significant because you're watching other teams in front of you and kind of hoping that they trip up and whatnot.
Yeah, but I do think that the NFL has a little bit of a marketing advantage on what, you know, because you said this a minute ago, they can build it up. They have a marketing advantage on what a big game is, because there is a Sunday night football game. There is a Monday night football game. There is a Thursday night football game that usually sucks, but at least they bill it as a big deal. Whereas with college football throughout the week, like, maybe the late game is a big one, but you kind of have to go through and pick out which one is the marquee game to you. And it might differ to you, like, you know what I'm saying? Whereas it's pretty much a consensus on what the marquee games are in the NFL.
Brandon Scott in for John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. I wonder if there's a little fun banter between Texans rookies with this Saban versus Jimbo thing going on, where you have Kenyon Green and maybe a little Mitchie, Christian Harris back and forth, two Alabama alums versus the Texas A&M alum. I'm sure there's a little bit of fun beef going on between those two.
Hey, fun beef. I'm more interested if they got receipts. Like, if they could actually come out here and I'm not endorsing snitching or nothing like that. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Mechie had an NIL.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, they had NILs, but they also were recruited before NIL, right? Yeah. Like, they're just old enough to have been recruited right before NIL. So, like, you know, Fisher Jimbo's acting like, you know, that Nick's been doing this for a while. Like, you know, I know the guy. So, you know, I wonder, okay, how far can you go back with that, you know? Yeah, that's what I would be interested in. If they could say, man, look, they both lying. You know what I'm saying? Like, they did their part, you know, to get us here, or whatever the backdoor money bag was, or whatever it was, under the table, or whatever it was.
Before Jimbo Fisher, the beef between he and Saban, and what many people called one of the best rants in the history of sports, there was a Tommy Lasorda rant that I think will always be the GOAT when it comes to calling someone else out. Tommy Lasorda, then the manager of the Dodgers, was accused by Kurt Bavakwa of having a player throw at someone intentionally. And this made Jimbo Fisher, this made a Jimbo Fisher press conference that we saw yesterday, it made it seem like a David Culley press conference on a Monday. This is Tommy Lasorda, the GOAT of the call out, versus Kurt Bavakwa.
I have never, ever, since I've managed, ever told a pitcher to throw at anybody, nor will I ever. And if I ever did, I certainly wouldn't make him throw at a 130 hitter like LeFay or Bavakwa, who could hit water if he fell out of a boat. And I guarantee you this, when I pitched and I was going to pitch against a team that had guys on it like Bavakwa, I sent a limousine to get the to make sure he was in the mother lineup, because I kicked that ass any day in a week. He's a big mouth, I'll tell you that.
All right.
Yeah. There's that makes what happened yesterday and the day before sound like child's play. Rest in peace to Tommy Lasorda, man.
Rest in peace, all right.
That is something serious. He's like, man, you ain't even good enough to throw at. I want to pitch to your ass.
I'll send a limo to get you, to pick you up. One of the best things. Shout out to the days of the limo. Think Tank coming up at 12:35, 713-572-4610. Start your statement with, I think that. We'll get into that in a lot more. Also, Deshaun Watson, he's heading to the Bahamas. What does that itinerary look like? We'll get into that at 1 o'clock. But coming up, Martin Maldonado. My goodness, attaboy yesterday. Clearing the bases. The pat on the head of Martin Maldonado for getting a hit. Is he over 100 yet, by the way?
I think so.
There you go.
Finally. He's had a hit in four of his last five games.
Let's stop the game. We got some B. Scott Astros Nugs coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, little Astros Nugs with Brandon Scott. Covers the team. He's at most of the games. B. Scott, hit him with the Nugs. Astros playing some good baseball. And still got my doubts, though, but, you know.
The Astros are playing baseball.
Yes, they are.
Hey, but look, at least recently, everything's kind of come together. I was saying in the beginning of the year that, hey, this is a team that the identity's changing a little bit. The offense isn't as good as it was. You're missing some players out of your lineup. It's not the same. But lo and behold, your pitching is kind of taking over. And that's still the case. But now the offense has finally kind of caught up with everything. And not just the offense, but like the guys in the back of the lineup. Martin Maldonado. Shout out to Martin Maldonado, man. Callis, when he cleared the bases yesterday, right? And I think they already had the game won. I mean, they held him to one run. But Todd Callis act like he has seen a ghost. He act like he has seen a ghost with Martin Maldonado.
He's up to 122.
He's up to 122 and hits.
He's hitting like a pitcher. He was hitting worse than a pitcher. He's hitting like a pitcher now.
And hits in four of the last five games. Like,
oh, wow.
Like, if he could just be a passable, like, one, something is not going to get it done, but if he could just be in the low twos,
okay,
be a passable, actual
big
league hitter.
The low what?
The low twos, man. If he could just get there, I mean, I'm talking about, like, a little sweetener on the end. Biggest problem for me right now, honestly, is Alex Bregman. That's the biggest problem, because Alex Bregman is supposed to be your second or third best player, and right now I feel like he's maybe your fourth or fifth, somewhere behind Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, Jose Altuve, and Jeremy Pena, which is who I really want to talk about, because as good as Jeremy Pena's been and as much attention as he's getting, a lot of it being because obviously he's Carlos Correa's replacement, but like, just independent of that, as a rookie and as a third baseman, he's already like one of the better. To me, it's noteworthy as a shortstop. It's noteworthy for a couple of reasons. The rookie market was supposed to be big this year because you had a couple of big prospects that were starting on opening day. You had Bobby Witt out in Kansas City. You had the kid from Seattle, Rodriguez. And then there was another one, Torkelson, I think, in Detroit. All of these guys supposed to be bigger than Jeremy Pena. Who's the best rookie, though? Jeremy Pena. This was a big shortstop market. Carlos Correa, Trevor Story, Corey Seager. Who's leading the shortstops right now in slugging percentage and in war? Jeremy Pena. Like, to me, I feel like as much as we've liked Jeremy Pena and as much as we've enjoyed watching him so far, we might be underselling the guy and how good he's actually been early on in the season.
What do you mean we might be underselling him? Where the hell you been?
I feel like we might be underselling it. Like, we're talking about it in the context of a Carlos Correa replacement, but it might be even bigger than that. Like, this kid has potential to be one of the top shortstops in the game, period. Like, independent of just the Carlos Correa context, this guy could be Rookie of the Year in a year when rookies were supposed to be dope. Like, the top prospects started opening day, and they've been, you know, somewhat of a disappointment, whereas Jeremy Pena's been a revelation. I think it's an even bigger story than we realize.
I wonder if, you know, the pay the man last year, hashtag pay the man, anytime Carlos Correa did anything, like, as much as, of course, the finances came into play, I wonder, like, if the decision to go with Jeremy Pena was really just a financial decision, or if they figured that Jeremy Pena, it was worth going with Jeremy Pena instead of Carlos Correa.
It feels like it.
Obviously, in 3 years, you got to look ahead and you got to take into account that Tucker and Yordan Alvarez are going to be through arbitration. So there is that. But was it really just a financial situation, or could this have been the best baseball decision?
No, I feel like it could have actually been the baseball, like both, right? Like, if even if he was just marginally worse than Carlos Correa, then you could make the argument for doing it. But if he's going to perform in some cases better, like, maybe he's not quite as good of a defensive shortstop as Carlos Correa. Maybe he is.
He's
eventually.
He's definitely not. He's definitely not.
But like what I'm saying, like, eventually, of course, like, he's a rookie. But already, I feel like it feels like he's a better offensive player. And especially,
wait, what?
Like, already, it feels like he is a better overall.
Oh, my.
Carlos Correa was
713-572-4610. You say we're underdoing it. You're overdoing
Carlos
it
Carlos Correa was not a great offensive player. He's a good hitter, not a great hitter. Jeremy Pena right now, also a good hitter, not a great hitter. So as a rookie.
You're
so I'm saying eventually, one day, could Jeremy Pena be a better offensive player than Carlos Correa? I think it's in play. I mean, right now, he leads all shortstops in slugging. He's like top three in home runs. I mean, like, it's right there. It's right there to see. And I mean, you've seen the guns on the dude, right? Like, he's a bona fide power hitter. Like, there's just a different type of player, a different type of build. But I mean, I think offensively you might have something here.
Look, I think this is these are the situations where you gain credibility as a front office. Not that the Astros – well, James Click kind of did need it. Honestly, like if it, like we, I feel like we lump in the Luno decisions with the Click, but if this ends up being the smart baseball decision, and because of this, you have Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez along with Jeremy Pena, a case can be made that it was the better baseball decision. I do think you're getting a little bit crazy talking about being a better offensive player.
What
already?
I mean, Carlos Correa was not a great offensive player. He just was not. He was a good hitter. He was a clutch hitter, but he was not a great offensive player. Right now, Jeremy Pena leads all shortstops in WAR and slugging percentage.
713-572-4610. Armando, you're on with Landry Locker and Brandon Scott in for the OG.
What's going on, guys? Look, listen, as a fellow Puerto Rican, I got to say this about Carlos Correa. He's right. He wasn't great. He had some good moments, and that's about it. I think Jeremy Pena is an upgrade all the way around on the offense. And in a couple of years, we're going to be saying the same thing on defense. Guarantee it.
On a
second note, if Carlos ends up in New York, I hope he blows his knees out.
That's a little drastic.
I thought the Puerto Rican on Puerto Rican crime was bad enough, but my goodness, you hope he blows his knees out, huh?
That's a little drastic. I mean, I wonder how that plays in Puerto Rico. I know y'all are a real tribal community there. That's not good.
Do you think that the fact that Correa didn't get what he thought he was going to get kind of made the Astros look smart too? Because that was my first reaction. Like, it was assumed, and I assumed it. Hell, and maybe if he'd have had Scott Boras the whole time instead of trying to go with some sort of like acting agency, maybe Carlos Correa does get the money. But didn't like the league kind of tell you that maybe the Astros were on to something in some way, shape, or form? Now, there was the lockout, but he basically signed a one-year deal with the Minnesota Twins. Like, nobody gave him the 8 years, you know, $250 million or whatever that we were talking about. Didn't the league kind of tell you that maybe there was a little bit more to it than just simply pay the man?
The league told you that, and then also the league is all – like – it's all playing out as well when you look at the guys that did sign the big deals, right? So go over and check out what the Rangers are doing with Corey Seager. I know Corey Seager hasn't been terrible, but, you know, spending $500 million this past offseason has not translated into immediate success in any form or fashion for the Rangers. Marcus Semien, until like the last couple of games, has been awful. Javi Baez has not been great in Detroit. Like, this whole idea of paying all of this money for a shortstop for 10 years probably isn't going to age well anyway. They're probably going to end up looking smart. It was always a more emotional tie and argument for keeping Carlos Correa. And also the fact that you had just let George Springer go, with some people having the idea and logic of, hey, maybe you're saving this money for Carlos Correa. And then that ended up not being the case. So I think some people felt a little bit betrayed by that. But as far as like using your head over your heart, it was always in play that the Astros were thinking along the right lines and making the right decision.
I think on another level, and I know that there's no salary cap in baseball, but there is a budget. Like, let's be serious. There is a budget.
Tax,
there's a luxury tax, all that. Like, even if Jeremy Pena sucked, like, let's say Jeremy Pena was doing terrible.
Right.
And this was like almost how Bregman used to start seasons. Like, Jeremy Pena was struggling. He looked lost. There were people saying, you know, you might need to send this guy back down to the minors. Let's say he was doing that. You could still make a case that they made the right decision letting Correa walk because they were able to sign Justin Verlander when Correa walked. If you are of the belief that because they weren't signing Correa, they could bring back Verlander, with the way Verlander's pitching, if you want to connect those two things, I don't know how connected they are.
No, I think they are.
Then they made the right decision no matter what Pena does.
Well, and this is not to get too much into semantics of money, but signing Correa with $35 million plus a year puts you over the luxury tax. Signing, and for the foreseeable future, signing Justin Verlander to $25 million does not.
Okay.
And it's a more valuable position in that way if he's going to be an ace.
Well, then it's icing to me. Like,
there it is.
No matter what Pena is, Justin Verlander, with what he's given you and what you need and what we know that you need in October.
Yeah. It's a mathematical fact.
A Cy Young candidate right now.
Yeah.
Like, then it was a good decision no matter what Pena's doing, and Pena's basically icing. It's some damn good icing too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a mathematical fact. You ended up keeping the pitcher, like I said, and stayed under the luxury tax, and he's your best pitcher, possibly the best pitcher in the game right now, right? Like, he's leading the league in certain stats. I don't know, ERA or whatever it is. He's got these league-leading stats. and then Correa, it would be a marginal difference between the two, and that puts you over the luxury tax. Like and it's not just money with luxury tax. They're like draft penalties and a lot of minutia that goes with it. This is clearly the better decision.
So there we go.
I'm glad I'm not running the Astros because I would have paid Correa and I would have been wrong.
Pena over Correa per B. Scott, and a Puerto Rican wishes a knee injury on the Sparkle.
I was not ready for that. I was not expecting that at all.
Coming up, an apology from Nick Saban. Deshaun Watson is heading to the Bahamas, and the biggest endorsement of Davis Mills you will ever hear. The hits are lit next.
Playing all the hits. These are the hot stories of the day. You're listening to In the Loop with Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
Boy, B. Scott's got the text line going nuts. He basically said that Carlos Correa sucked and Jeremy Pena is way better.
To a T. That's exactly what I said.
You can use the Odyssey app and you can check my work there.
To see what I really said.
Whether or not that's fake news or not. If you don't have the Odyssey app, what the hell are you doing with your life? But reset what you just said. You said Jeremy Pena over Correa was the right choice. I actually co-signed it for a different reason. A bad Jeremy Pena and what Justin Verlander is right now is more valuable. And I'm not even factoring in the luxury tax,
right?
Which matters.
Very much so.
But I would take that trade any day of the week. Verlander and whatever Pena is over Correa.
Well, and then he's actually turned out to be one of your better power hitters. Like, I think that so Correa, and maybe Jeremy Pena ends up being this too, ultimately, because we have such a small sample size of what Jeremy Pena actually is on a big league level. But Correa was known to be a historically streaky hitter. Like, there were times when he looked great, and there were times when he was lost. And that's just a fact of it. And then, like, he would do great things in the postseason. And this is really not as much of a knock on Correa as it is just building up Jeremy Pena in terms of what he could possibly be. Like, you see the power. You see he's hitting for average and for power. Like, to me, it's just all there. Like, it is a plus with Jeremy Pena, aside from whatever Carlos Correa is.
Speaking of the Odyssey app doesn't only work in the United States. We got a lot of loopholes in other cities. We got loopholes in other countries. Armando called in last segment and said, as a fellow Puerto Rican, Carlos Correa basically sucks, and he hoped that he would hurt his knee if he went to New York. I understand Armando had an interesting discussion during the commercial break. Armando, go ahead.
Yeah, so apparently my dad is in Puerto Rico. He's listening, hears me, calls me immediately, and he goes, "Was that you?" I don't know what you're talking about. He goes, "You need to call back right now and apologize before something bad happens."
Okay, so we're apologizing.
So I'd like get to that backtrack done. It a little bit, and I just hope he stubs his toe every time he looks outside his penthouse.
All right, there we go. Thank you very much. Shout out to the Puerto Rican loopholes out there.
Yeah.
There we go.
That's pretty good.
That right there is some good stuff for the Odyssey app. Nick Caserio, he's going to be on Payne and Pendergast on Monday morning at 7:30 a.m. What is the one question that Brandon Scott, one of the best question askers in town, would ask Nick Caserio if he could only ask one question? And when you ask it, me and Figgy are going to rank the question 1 to 10. Go ahead. No pressure.
Damn, put me on the spot here.
On the spot. You are not Little Caesars. You are not hot and ready.
Yeah, man. I don't really have much for Nick, if I'm honest with you. Like, if there's anything.
Wow.
Like, we got Nick. Think about it. We got Nick every day for 3 days in a row during the draft.
Wow,
like,
this is
I'm actually just ready to get to the football. I don't really have to hear.
Let's get to the games.
Let's get to the games,
I'm there, man. Scott.
I don't really
talk about what's happening on the field.
Hey, look, I encourage y'all to listen, and I encourage y'all to be tuned in, locked in on the Odyssey app, on the dial, Sports Radio 610. But I don't really got too much for the Nick Caserio word salad, man. I'm just, at this point, he's already picked the players. I'm good with it.
B. Scott, that's awful.
Yeah, man. I don't have nothing.
I'm done. Man, you're sorry.
I got nothing.
I'm done hyping you up. Goodness gracious.
I got nothing.
I want to ask him about the NIL. I want to make it newsworthy. Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher are arguing a lot about the NIL. When it comes to evaluating prospects, does NIL come into play when it comes to evaluating them in any way, shape, or form? Nick, is Davis Mills, can we say right now Davis Mills is 100% your starting quarterback heading into the season?
I think he's hit on that. I think he's hit on that for the most part.
I want to get him on record.
I think he's hit on that on record.
All right, well, then if he says yes, don't be posted on sportsradio610.com then, since it's not news.
I won't. And also,
if he says Davis Mills is the starter, that's not going on sportsradio610.com.
Because we've already done it with Lovey. Like, we've already done it.
Just post the old article.
It'll go.
It won't go.
But it won't be the first time we repeated a thing. Like, I get it, man. You're the podium critic. You love the press conferences. But a lot of times, man, these things get repetitive and they be the same thing.
This is an exclusive interview.
A different way of saying
this. Oh, no, it'll be 7:30 a.m. on Sports Radio 610.
You know what I like from those interviews more than anything is that Nick, I think, opens up his personality a little bit. And he started to do this in the press conferences as well. But you could always tell the difference between, like, how he was kind of a hard ass in the press conference setting. But he would kind of lighten up with Payne and Pendergast, and so that's kind of really what I'm more so looking forward to. And they got a good job.
They need to talk a little more wrestling, man. Yeah, they want to hear more wrestling from Nick.
They get him a little looser.
Well, according to Seth, the audience doesn't know the wrestling references, but then he'll mention Mark Twain every other segment. So yeah, I don't know. I think people like the wrestling references. The other thing that I would like to know from Casario, when did you become a weirdo? Like, when did you start eating the way you eat? Why are you the way you are? Was there ever a time when you would have indulged in a Taco Bell Mexican pizza? Like, can we at least go back to the John Carroll days? When did you become such a weirdo with this diet, man? When did this happen?
Why are you trying to temper the excitement of the rookie class when that is the best thing that you've done?
I thought he did a good job at it. I didn't think it was B.O.B. like. He was a hardo, though.
Yeah, but it's whack. Like, he did a good job of it, sure, and there's more credit. I think the whole logic of that is there's more credibility when Casario does it versus B.O.B. But don't shoot down the good thing, the excitement. Like, this is why people care about your team. The things that you've done, you drafted Davis Mills and you drafted 9 rookies, a few of which people are really excited about. Lean into that, man. You don't really got a lot going for yourself. I don't fully understand that. Like, I would want to know from Nick Casario, like, why? What do you have against the excitement about these rookies right now, and the excitement circling your team?
The other question: Nick Casario joining Payne and Pendergast 7:30 a.m. right here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. I want to ask him, like, without getting into specifics, and I don't think you should do that. I think it would be a violation of the G code. But, like, how many times were you in New England, in the environment that you were in, with Belichick, etc., and you told yourself, or you found yourself thinking, man, when I'm the overseer of football operations and I'm calling the shots, I want to change this? Like, how often did you find your self thinking that, you know?
Yeah. And to follow up with that, what are some of the examples of the things that you've been able to do?
He just needs to sip the coffee. He's finding his rhythm.
Hey, you know what, though?
To be fair, you put him on the spot.
Hey, can I say something, too, about press conferences, though? Look, as somebody that goes to as many as I go to, they are also a collaborative. A lot of people get in there and get combative and competitive, but the best way to approach them is to be collaborative. Listen to the questions that everybody else asks and think, you know what, I might have had a question, but let's ditch that. Let me follow up on what this other person, Landry actually had a better question. I'm humble enough to say so. Let me follow up with that instead of whatever the hell else I was going to ask about. That's one of my favorite parts about it, is kind of collaborating and building off of everybody else's question.
You pick up, find that rhythm. But there is nothing worse than when you're in like a press conference and there's like a rhythm going, and then someone just throws the softball.
Let's talk about
there.
The receivers. Oh,
yeah. Throws the softball up there.
And also, it's like snarky about it. I know everybody's wanting to talk about this really relevant topic that everybody's talking about, but let me talk about this thing that
He's
doesn't matter at all.
The question. You're saying the same thing every time.
Could you tell me about this background story for this feature that I'm doing that nobody's going to read or that anybody cares about? And that's going to be my question instead of this valuable time when we could be getting good answers? Yeah, we get that a lot.
I hate when there's like media availability and it's like the media availability decides what you're going to write about. So it's like they send Rex Burkhead and Needle Dong Johnson up to the podium. So the beat writer's naturally going to write about Rex Burkhead and Needle Dong Johnson. So as soon as Lovie Smith goes up there, it's like, what do you think about the performance of Needle Dong Johnson? And then that's basically what we get.
Yeah.
Like that.
And those are the times, and I can say this, those are the times where, like, you haven't given enough thought to your questions, or you don't have, your questions aren't creative enough, and so you're kind of just mailing it in. Those are mailing in questions, to be honest. Like, and you can kind of tell who's doing it when they're doing it. But
Another thing. Names? I'm just kidding. Don't do that.
I got to show my face.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
But, you know, another thing I wouldn't mind hearing Nick Caserio talk about, since he is, like, such a nerd and an analytics guy.
You're getting a rhythm now.
What, like, in addition to watching the film, what statistics matter to you specifically in a quarterback? And I would ask Davis Mills this, too, whenever I get a hold of him. But, like,
yeah, what are stats for a quarterback?
Yeah, what are the stats that matter to you most, like the ones that you are using the most to evaluate a quarterback?
I'll tell you exactly what he'll say.
What he'll say.
Well, you know, there's really a lot of factors that come into it. You got to take everything into account. You know, sometimes you're completing a lot of passes, but, you know, those passes are easy passes to complete.
The exercise is to read between the lines and find within there, he's going to give you a stat. He's going to say, I would say yards per attempt. He'll throw something in there in between the word salad. So I look for it.
Speaking of Davis Mills, guy who knows Nick Caserio very well. Again, Nick Caserio, 7:30 a.m. Monday right here on Sports Radio 610. Chris Sims had Davis Mills ranked 35th on his quarterback list. However, there was a pretty strong endorsement of Davis Mills. Chris, do you think, courtesy of NBC Sports, do you think the Texans this time next year will be okay with Davis Mills being their starting quarterback?
I think there is enough around him. I do. Yeah, I'm not sold that he's definitely the future yet. You know, their offensive line, it's not bad. Running back, got one of my favorites in Damian Pierce this year. But after I studied it a little bit, I went, my heart of heart, kind of my gut kind of said, I think he's going to be the quarterback for maybe more than just the year.
Yeah.
Or at least a few more. And we'll see where it goes from there. Yeah.
So there you go. Chris Sims, hell of an endorsement. Former quarterback for the Texans, Deshaun Watson, a crazy week. Meets with the NFL. You had the leak of the testimony in which he admits that his original accuser was crying, actually sent her an apology text. Kind of not the best look for Deshaun Watson there. And now he's going to the Bahamas. What do you think the itinerary looks like for Deshaun Watson and his Cleveland teammates going to the Bahamas?
Man, I really hope that it's just football, but it ain't.
No, it ain't.
You can believe
you don't go
that
to the
it
Bahamas
ain't.
For just football.
Nope, because you could do that in Cleveland or
it's playing golf.
Yeah, you could do that in any other, maybe a warm weather city somewhere. But yeah, no, I would love to be kind of a fly on the wall, and I'd like to go, to be quite honest, because I bet you it's gonna be lit. I bet you're gonna have a good time.
Yeah, they're definitely gonna have a good time. Get some work in with his receivers.
And it's in the Bahamas, where, you know, I don't know, maybe the stories can be left there. Maybe the stories that whatever happens in the Bahamas can actually stay in the Bahamas, unlike whatever happened in Houston and Atlanta and wherever the hell else he was at, Arizona and all of that.
Nick Saban apologizes. My goodness. Hours after Jimbo Fisher went to the podium in College Station, Nick Saban apologized. It was brief, but there was an apology from the Alabama head coach.
I should have never really singled anybody out. You know, that was a mistake, and I really apologize for that.
All right, there you go. There you go.
Yeah. I said that yesterday. Like, what? Why are you picking this fight? And he got, again, he got too loose. A little loose lips, a little too comfortable in the setting. But this ain't really a fight that was even necessarily worth picking or an argument worth having. Like, I don't even get why he even started. I'm glad he did, because it's fun as hell, and it's going to make October 8th even more fun. It's going to make SEC Media Day super lit. I'll probably pay more attention to that than I ever have, but I don't get why he felt like he had to go down that road.
Yeah, and the more you listen to it, like, you take a step back. Damn, Jimbo, have you felt this way for a long time? Kind of feels like he was just, like, foaming at the mouth, ready to say something about Nick Saban. You think there was any jealousy, too, that Nick Saban is the GOAT? Like, is there any jealousy there with Jimbo Fisher?
Yeah, I would imagine there's some, like, being in the shadow, like, a complex there. Like, this is the guy that, you know, you used to work for. You know, now you feel like a peer, but maybe still viewed behind. Like, you've beaten him twice just in the offseason, or just since last season. Once during the season, had the better recruiting class, and then here it is. Nick Saban still able to go out there and talk his talk without any without impunity. Like, yeah, I think there's probably maybe not jealousy, but resentment is probably a better word.
If you're Texas A&M and you're a Texas A&M alum, or you're a Texas A&M fan, or you grew up rooting for Texas A&M, you should embrace the fact that you can pay the most to get recruits.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, we can.
Yeah.
You're damn right.
Yeah. Like,
yes, we can.
Well, when he said the point about Jackson State and they bragged about it, yeah, they bragged about it. Like, I hope they continue to brag about it and to lean in. I mean, what is the issue for the HBCUs anyway? The money is different. The accessibility is different. The resources, the opportunity is different. Well, here comes an HBCU with a celebrity as a head coach with some cachet, and they actually can compete. I don't know. Maybe there's a little resentment there. Like, man, damn, I'm losing to Texas A&M, one of my understudies, and Jimbo Fisher. I'm even losing guys to Jackson State. Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know the most dangerous thing about this, though?
What's that?
And it has nothing to do with economics. It has nothing to do with, like, the players getting this money. It has nothing to do with anything that Nick Saban has mentioned. Your evaluation is even more important now than it's ever been, because I think part of what happened to Texas and what happened to Mack Brown is they just started looking at the recruiting rankings, and they just started offering the five stars immediately. And they brought in the five stars. They weren't really, like, digging deep into the evaluation. And
just so they could win the recruiting rankings,
yes,
Newsday.
Yes, yeah. And that's what's going to happen now, where I don't know how it factors in, boosters, et cetera. And the other thing is, like, I don't know how much of these conversations are being had before, but what if the coach doesn't like the player as much as the booster does? I'm assuming that the guy takes a visit and they say how long it is. I don't know. There's a lot of variables here. But you could get lazy with the evaluation and just try to get the top guy.
Look, we just need our boosters for the money. We don't need y'all doing no evaluation. That would look too much like an odd power dynamic that's sort of similar here. Somebody that's not qualified to be doing football evaluation,
Yeah, that
would
suck.
Don't want to get there.
Celtics equaled the Eastern Conference Finals yesterday, 127-102. Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals tonight at 8 p.m. Golden State coming off the assing of the Dallas Mavericks. Could I interest you in a stat, though?
Go ahead.
The Mavericks are actually 10-0 following 20-point losses this year. It's crazy.
Well, it's because they've got a top two or three player in the game, like you should be. When you got to do like
top what?
Top two or three player in the game.
Okay.
Yeah, who would you put? I would put maybe Giannis over.
No, I agree. I just didn't think you did.
Yeah, no. My tweet was an example of you not believing in Jalen Green, not me not believing in Luka Doncic.
Your tweet said that the Rockets would have what the Mavs have in 3 years.
And at the time, the Mavs had a team in the Western Conference semifinals, which is not very hard to do, I don't think. How many teams make the semifinals? Eight. There you go. So could they be a top eight team? Could they be the top eight team in the NBA? Sure they can.
We'll get to the Astros in a sec, the attaboy moment at the juice box yesterday. But first, let's hear from Richard. Richard, you're on In the Loop. Go ahead.
Yeah, I really enjoy your talk about the NLI and the A&M Alabama dust up. But, what's happening here is so old. It's only taken new form. I lived in Knoxville, Tennessee for 16 years and listened to SEC radio long before there was Paul Feinbaum, and there was huge sentiment in the mid-80s, loudest of all from Tuscaloosa. We just want to open it up and pay the boys. No one is more for that idea than Alabama. Alabama was trumpeting that in the 30s. This is not new. It's just legal now.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some form of it. I would say this is new, though, especially when you're talking about the transfer portal and stuff.
Yeah, and the legality of it is new.
The legality and businesses benefiting from it. Like, I think, there's been a different form of it, but it's definitely new.
Yeah, and again, to Nick Saban's point, like, he's embracing the legality of it and saying, hey, okay, now there needs to be some prioritization and some organization around all of it. Like, hey, let's still make college and opportunity and all of that, like your future, let's still make that the thing that we're selling while we're still also doing this thing that is now legal that we've been doing for however many years.
Into right center field, this ball's going to be down and all the way to the wall. Moldy's going to clear the bases. Astros are pouring out of the dugout like they won the game. Moldy clears the bases with a double.
Astros win 5-1, AT&T Sportsnet with the call. Todd Kalas shocked Maldonado with the bases loaded, clearing double. 34 days till the NBA draft. Here's Tillman Fertitta talking about the Rockets having the third selection.
It's exciting, and you would always prefer one or two, but it's exciting, and we're going to have another great athlete to go with this unbelievable young group of guys. That's why we hired Rafael and his team, because we knew they knew what they were doing, and we couldn't be happier with where we are today. You know, when you look back and you see what we have today that we got out of the trade, we're very happy in what's happening out there.
There you go. Still in for Tita, courtesy of Mark Berman, Martin Maldonado. Dude, hat on the head.
Dude, Martin Maldonado, like, he act like he's seen a ghost. Like, he couldn't believe that Martin Maldonado dare come up with a clutch hit.
Coming up in the noon hour, lunchtime, we'll have the think tank at 12:35. But coming up next, are Davis Mills marbles being underestimated? We'll discuss next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.